FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. The date is August 16th, 2016. And, well, banking, we know that that there's lots of problems there. And one of the problems we've been discussing, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, is the reemergence of subprime lending, especially in the auto sector. You know that there's a reason why they call it subprime lending, and that's because it's not prime lending. And, well, Danielle Park is back with us after a nice hiatus, vacation, and taking it easy for the summer. Danielle, welcome back.
Hey, Carrie.
Hey, so I hope you're nice and relaxed now and get ready to resume and get back with things.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been pretty much resumed all throughout, just slowed down on some of the media stuff. It's not the kind of job that goes away while you take a break, you know?
I know. Even when I was away, I was still doing some segments and still I was making notes for future segments, future shows, and thinking about, well, hey, what does this mean? What does that mean? I mean, even when I was in Wyoming, which is about as right leaning a state as you can find, I pull up in the morning to get breakfast and there's a gas station with some restaurants and it's got this poster slapped up in the window. I mean, biggest one I ever saw. It said EBT cards accepted here. That's the modern rendition of food stamps. Yeah, so
I've seen that. I've seen that in various stores in the US. I was at a gas station once and the person ran in and paid with one of those cards and the staff were kind of disgruntled for some reason. I said, "Oh, is that a problem?" They said, "Well, you know, we get a little tired of people pulling up in their BMWs, gassing up, coming in, getting smokes and whatever else they need. And on the welfare card or the food stamps card, and then screaming away while we're here laboring it for minimum wage behind the counter." So,
yeah, well, they even take them in strip clubs in the U.S. And other fine entertainment establishments. But hey, and they probably bought their car with a subprime auto loan, right?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, you know, so long as I've been writing recently about this predilection to dumb money is what I call it. So dumb money is money that everyone has where everyone's special, so no one is, right? Because everyone can pay anything because it's not a question of building up savings in order to buy. It's a question of what credit one can wield or get from where. And of course, the lenders have all downsized their exposure to the collection, so no one's a responsible lender anymore. And so you just have a system that has no checks and balances, and it's all just funny money. And of course, we all pay the price in silly valuations, silly prices that make no sense, that just mound up debt everywhere you look and are crushing for productivity in the real economy.
Yeah, well, yeah. So the markets are not performing their functions, right? They're basic function, which is allocation of risk and allocation of capital, pricing risk, all of those things that markets traditionally did. So when we really have a problem here, this thing is not going to work properly and it's just going to be a total mess, a meltdown. And what's going to happen here?
You know, it's interesting because the two people that are actually aware of the unraveling of all this are the ones that are not perhaps self-deluded too much, but also who are having to deal with the reality of it. So for number one is savers. So, you know, there's a missed reality in this goosing of asset prices everywhere is that rents are a fraction of what you need for carrying costs in many cases in many of the hot centers because, you know, rents are not sufficient to compensate for the capital expenditure on properties in many places. That's because prices went up too high. Same thing with, you know, things like corporate bonds. Prices up too high, yields are too low, don't compensate for the risk and the capital loss purview that the buyers face. Same thing with stocks. Make no sense. Most of the dividend yields are, you know, a fraction of what they need to be to compensate for the capital risk. And all that is just really almost like a trebling of the capital you need to produce the same kind of income today. So while central banks have been focused on how to goose asset prices and make it look like people are wealthy, in the real world, in effect, what they've done is just increase the liability side of the equation enormously. Because, you know, what you could produce off $1 million of savings 10 years ago takes almost $3 million of savings today to produce that same level of income. Meanwhile, expenditures have really, you know, either stayed the same or gone up in that 10-year period. So no one's got it further ahead. This whole idea that this is a magical wealth effect is actually nonsense. So the people who are crying foul on that now are real savers in the real world who are saying, you know, to hell with this negative yield stuff. I'll just put my savings in my mattress or in my safe at home. If you're going to charge me literally to have money on deposit at the bank, why would I put money there? And you're seeing capital flowing out of the banking system in many countries. The second thing is asset managers, like people who are actually supposed to manage assets and income to match liabilities. So at insurance companies, pension funds, you know, they're crying foul because they're saying, listen, the honest ones, as I like to say, that the least worthy ones are still promising that they're magical and, you know, this will all work out, because they, you know, they aren't responsible for what happens, and they will profess that they can't be held responsible for when it all goes down the tank. But the ones that are conscientious are saying, wait a minute, this math doesn't work. Are you guys going to increase your contribution 3 times from what you've been putting in the past? Or are we going to cut the benefits that we've promised to pay? One or the other here, because math is a great equalizer and you can't make this stuff up. So, you know, those two people are sort of sober voices right now. And they are enforcing this conversation more into the political sphere. So hopefully, you know, the more this, the pressure cooker builds here, because yields keep falling. Stocks at all-time highs in the U.S. are just ludicrous mode relative to everything that's going on in the real world and the economic picture. And even in the earnings recession that's happened, I mean, industrial production's recessing. Everything is in a downtrend, very likely heading towards recession or already there. And yet, you know, the liabilities just keep gapping wider.
Yeah, well, I'm always reminded of Will Rogers' famous quote. I think he was talking about the panic of 1907, you know, or 1903, whatever date it was. Never great for dates.
Pick a panic.
Yeah, pick a panic. Right. And he always said, ignorance got us into this mess and ignorance will get us out. Right. That was his joke. And that's what these guys are hoping. Right.
Well,
ignorance got us into this mess and it'll get us out. Right, Danielle?
I guess the less intellectually honest you are, the more you can just fudge and hope for the best. And I guess you take no blame. You Teflon when things come up short down the road, you say everybody lost and everybody didn't. No one saw it coming and all that stuff. But the more intellectually honest people are saying, wait, I can see this coming and this is not good. And we don't have to let this train hit us. But, you know, as we speak, delinquency rates on commercial and industrial loans are spiked in the U.S. back almost to the highs of 2008 already. And yet you've got the, you know, the whole risk in the high yield bond market priced as if it's treasuries still virtually.
Like, yeah.
It's, you know, meanwhile, defaults are rising. Meanwhile, and you hear about the same nonsense from the long always crowd. These are the asset allocators who I've been writing about a lot lately because they just are so disingenuous and so unhelpful and actually destructive. And the pretense that they're adding some alpha or value to anything when all they do is buy everything all day long at all times, no matter when capital flows come in, no matter when capital is coming from new money from clients who sold businesses or inherited or, you know, assets, whatever. As the money comes in, they have it in their static allocation system like the week after. And if you look at, there was a recent survey by Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and they're talking about, wow, you know, that we are at the highest cash level since 2001. This is a very unloved market. But if you think about that, the highest cash levels, what is it, Carrie? 5.8% of portfolios are currently in cash. Why is that? Because we're dealing with an industry who doesn't get paid when they put money in cash or in the lowest risk instruments. They always want to have stuff in the highest risk instruments, regardless of the price, because that's where they collect their fees. So you've got it. It's just, it's a broken system. It's a a disingenuous, corrupt leadership across the board, and savings continues to take a hit, continues to come up short, gaps keep growing, and you just know where this is headed. And it's going to be in painful revelation for those who are not paying attention, who are bought into the long always junk, who believe that central banks in some way have some magical solution here, when in fact they're just, you know, cavitating us all.
Yeah, cavitating. I like that word. And yeah, they're gutting us effectively. And they just keep going on and on. And you look at certain states' public pension funds, and they're just horrifying. New Jersey, Illinois, and the list goes on. I mean, California. Yeah.
They recently reduced their target. I think that was this week, to 6.5% from 7. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, their 2050, their last year return was 0.6. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're edging it down. Again, this is, you know, asset managers are in a tight spot, right? If you do the math and you know in your heart that it's not going to work, you can't attain the returns that are mandated, that it's not possible in the current low yield world. If you admit that, in many cases, that you just get replaced by someone who promises the world. So, you know, they've been faced with this 8.5% target on the average pension fund, and they've known that that's farcical. But, you know, you have to slowly talk the board down towards a more reasonable level. And we're still way far above, you know, the prospective return over the next 7 years. If you look at the work of Jeremy Grantham or any of the fundamental analysts that look at the macro stuff, they're saying, hey, wait, where we are with pricing from here over the next 7 years, you're likely to get zero to negative returns. And that's across all asset classes. That's real estate, that's stocks, that's bonds. I mean, that's the meat and potatoes of these institutions that are supposed to be providing income for future needs. And so, you know, another thing I had on the blog this week, Carrie, was that clip of Pam Martins, who we know from Wall Street on Parade. She writes that great blog site, Wall Street on Parade. But there she was testifying in 1998, June of 1998, when the U.S. Congress was considering, policymakers were considering finally putting the nail in the coffin of Glass-Steagall and allowing banks to go back to the mosh pit with investment banking. And she was testifying, hey, you know, we did that for a reason. We had that law put in place because of this mess that went on in the 30s, because of this mess that's gone on in various financial crises since. If you look at what was happening in the Asian financial crisis right at that very moment, she says, I can't believe that we're here discussing throwing out Glass-Steagall. And she said, you know, it's preposterous. It's absolutely preposterous. And of course, within a year, Clinton had already signed the bill to put the final nail, because as you know, they were whittling away at the provisions and divisions of Glass-Steagall for many years before that. But there's another instance of sober analysis, honest assessment, you know, a grown up saying, listen, guys, this is infantile and it's going to blow the system up again. And we don't need to learn this lesson again. And yet they did it anyway.
We did.
So here we are, you know, not even 10 years later, or just over 10 years later, you know, back in the throes of a 1930s style crisis. And you could set your watch by it, Carrie.
Oh, I know. And exactly what she said is exactly what happened. And we knew better. We should have known better, because it all happened before. And when you read that stuff, you know, in history about what they were doing in the 30s, in the 20s, rather, you know, leading up to the Great Depression there, the crash in Wall Street, you know, it's exactly, I mean, with the technology, obviously, was very primitive back then, but it's exactly what happened now.
Yeah, all these and they were selling junk bonds too back then. The bankers were selling junk bonds, you know, to literally every human that had 50 cents of savings was advised to buy bank bonds at that time, as well as stocks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, think about it. Since then, we've had Greenspan himself, who was the cheerleader of the whole Glass-Steagall eradication. He's come out with his mea culpa saying, sorry, I was wrong. I think we made a mess of the thing. Sandy Weill, who was named one of the top five architects of the financial crisis, you know, the head of Citigroup in the late 90s. He was one of the guys that was at the forefront of pushing through, you know, the Smith-Barney Travelers merger and lobbying. He was on Was that 2012 telling everyone, oops, we made a mistake and it's time to go back to breaking up the big banks? We've created a monster. We can't control it.
Yeah.
You know, so he's already said that. And mm-hmm. then if you notice this week, Carrie, you've got different central bankers coming out and making, Williams was one of them saying, I think we've got to reassess. We've really tried all these experimental policies and I think we've come to the end of the road. And so now they're all trying to back away from this mess they've made, right? And I don't blame just them because there's been many complicit players and people have been willfully blind and wanting to hear nonsense and not wanting to look at the numbers too closely because it meant they had to save more and spend less. But I'm hoping that finally at all levels, as this thing blows for the third time in 17 years, you're going to have a period where it'll be very difficult to ignore reality again. And I think that will force some pressure again back on, you know, back to basics, back to breaking up nonsense, back to revelation about what we need to do to get this system under some semblance of order again.
It's just at what price? At what price here, Danielle?
Well, it'll be really a capital price for sure. It'll be a capital price. But as that's just as we started saying at the beginning, as asset prices come down, what's the other end of that teeter totter? The yields from those assets goes up and suddenly everything mm-hmm. becomes financially viable again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I always say on the show here, Danielle, the one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history, right?
Yeah.
And we're about to learn a big lesson.
We go sane one person at a time, right? We go insane in masses and we come back to sanity one person at a time. That's Charles McKay said that, right?
Yeah. And boy, we're going through mass insanity now, but there's just so many people involved in the financial system now that there's such a vested interest in keeping it going to the very last possible moment. And, you know, that's just a huge problem. Well, anyways, that's it for now. But Danielle, welcome back. It's great to talk to you again. And hey, we'll just have to keep an eye on things and see when the mass insanity is going to come to an end. But when it does, I happen to think you're not going to want to be anywhere near it. That's for sure. It's not going to be pleasant. We know that. So
yeah.
Hey, take a look at Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com, must reading. And you'll always find a link in our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, in the show notes to this interview. Danielle, we will talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Carrie. Bye.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.